You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
What did I tell you about me taking off in weather? You notice how the minute I come back to work, the weather is beautiful?
Yeah.
It never fails, Sean. It never fails. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Monday edition of Feedback. Here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone number is here, 610-374-8800, or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our email address here is feedback at 830WEEU.com. And our dedicated text line, if you want to text in your opinion, is 484-650-3373. And of course, we got a bunch of platforms that our podcast is heard on if you happen to miss one of our shows. Sean, what name some of the platforms that we're on here, bud.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. You could also go to 830WEEU.com. You look at the podcast tab, you click on it, you'll see feedback. You see all of our episodes there starting from February 26th, which is when I started being your producer here. And then if we have special interviews and you just want to listen to the interview, you do the same thing. You go to 830WEEU.com.
Okay.
On the top, there's a tab that says programs. You click on the feedback one and you'll have all of our interviews there. We have some pretty big ones there. Bruce Castor, we have Dr. Timothy Blessing. I know he's a popular guest here. Donna Reed, just a bunch of fun, really informative interviews if you just want to listen to those. So I highly recommend you check them out.
And you tell me that that with the podcasts, people listen and they can actually share their ratings, how they rate the podcast.
Yeah, so if you listen to our podcast, say on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, there's a rating system.
Okay.
If you give us 5 stars and you leave a comment and you like it, that actually helps push this podcast on to different people who want to listen to something similar. So say someone who doesn't normally listen to this show, doesn't listen to us, period.
Right.
Is
They're not aware of their show.
But listens to something similar as a podcast form.
Okay.
With enough 5-star ratings and enough likes and comments and reviews, that our program would be pushed into, you know, a suggestion for people. So a news program, a news podcast,
with
enough 5-star, which is what this program is, enough 5 stars, enough likes, enough comments, I guess pushed to an entirely new audience and gets our feedback out there for other people.
So they can do that right on the platform.
Yep. You can do it on your phone. Like, again, if you listen to it on your phone, that's an easy way to do it on that particular platform.
Cool. Like that.
Yeah. Right, it's a neat system.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate that. Let's take a look at today's top three topics. Why are Americans skeptical of President Biden's first term achievements? We'll discuss possible reasons why that's the case. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman again separates himself from the progressive wing of his party, this time over migrant squatters. And President Biden faces hurdles getting on Ohio's presidential ballot, and it has nothing to do with the other states who tried to ban Donald Trump from their ballots. No, it's not retaliation for that, and we'll discuss why the president is facing those hurdles out there in Ohio. All right, let's get started. This one, first of all, before I get started, let me talk about Friday. All right, Friday was the earthquake, right? And the only way I knew that there was an earthquake was that Mike Keller posted something on his Facebook page, said, "Was that an earthquake I just felt?" I didn't feel a thing. And when I went to get a haircut later that day, I even asked the guys at the barber shop, "Did you guys feel anything?" And that's in Douglasville, the barber shop, and they said no. And I've talked with other people since in my neck of the woods, and like me, it depends on what parts of Pottstown you were in as to whether or not you actually felt the earthquake, which is really weird. But a lot of people I understand here in Redding felt it. And, of course, the epicenter was in Lebanon Township, New Jersey, and it impacted New York, Pennsylvania, and other parts in the Northeast. But no damage was done here in Berks County, at least.
Yeah, that's interesting. See, I actually felt and heard it. I was working out at the time, and I was in my basement. And where our house is located, we're right next to a pretty, not a busy road, but like it's the road in our development that people use just to go back and forth. Like it's not part of it, but it's an important road. And sometimes when you get big, like tractor trailers, like 18 wheelers,
right,
it gets pretty loud while
sure.
it's going back. So that's
yeah.
what I thought it was initially. Then I felt the ground shake a little bit. I'm like, whoa, is this an earthquake? And then I went to Twitter and saw, yeah, it was in fact an earthquake. Now, then there was a pretty decent aftershock that they said that some people felt like hours later.
Right.
I didn't feel that, but the initial one I heard and felt, and I'm asking everybody, I'm like, was that an earthquake? And if it was, I'm like, are you okay? And so it was interesting because, you know, we don't get that a whole lot over here.
Yeah, well, what made me laugh was that some reporters, I'm sorry, but I cannot understand reporters today, journalists of today, or at least those who call themselves journalists. There were actually some journalists who were trying to convince us that climate change was responsible for the earthquake. Now, give me a break. Clearly, I felt like telling them, take a geology class, will you, and learn about earthquakes? But I couldn't believe there were actually reporters who indicated that it was climate change related. And I thought, get off your agenda, will you, and just report the facts here. But anyway, enough of that. If you want to talk about your experience with the earthquake from Friday, feel free to give us a call here at 610-374-8800 or toll free 888-401-0459. Or you can text us at 484-650-3373. The thing that's the big news today, obviously, is the total solar eclipse that's going to happen this afternoon. And I saw this article on 6ABC's website that CNN wrote. And I, again, to me, it's proof that you can't always depend on the scientists. All right, the very scientists who are telling us about climate change. This story says that there's a new map calculations that raise some concerns that the path of totality, where it's possible to see the moon completely block out the sun, is slightly narrower than NASA had calculated. This piece on 6ABC that CNN reported on says that means some cities on the edge of the route that are experiencing or expecting to experience a second or two of total darkness may be left out as a result. NASA hasn't changed its predictions, though, but the space agency advises that there is some uncertainty involved in mapping the eclipse's path. Karen Fox is a spokesperson for NASA, and she said in an emailed statement the following: calculations that use a slightly larger radius for the size of the sun yield an eclipse path that is slightly narrower. She says this difference would only affect cities on the very edge of the path of totality, where blanket predictions are difficult regardless. A few city blocks one way or the other could mean 20, 10, or 0 seconds of totality. By the way, we're not in the path of totality. I think we're going to get at most 90% blockage of the sun today. And for viewing purposes, NASA scientists and other experts recommend that spectators head for the middle rather than the perimeter of the path anyway, if you want to see the total blockage of the sun this afternoon. Dr. Edward Guinan is a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Villanova University, and he's quoted in this piece as saying, "I would never, never be near the edge of where that totality is, because it's the difference between night and day." And this part of the story really got me. Are you ready for this? Listen carefully now. "But few things in science are ever certain." Yeah, I'm sure Dr. Fauci is cringing when he hears anybody say that. "Few things in science are ever certain." And NASA also acknowledges that exact measurements of the eclipse path are difficult to pin down. Have you ever seen that phrase, that sentence, "few things in science are ever certain," when they're doing a story about climate change? I haven't. But I found this interesting, and I'm going to pin this to the wall. I like this phrase. And it's so good to see CNN reporting that. Because it's true. You know, how many predictions have there been over the years of climate change, catastrophes, disasters that never occurred? You hear me, Al Gore? Yeah, they never occurred. Now, am I saying that there is no such thing as climate change? No, and I've said that before. But these chicken littles out there who are crying that the sky is falling, they get all the attention from the media, and they've got our young people worried to death that their existence on this earth is going to be short-lived because of climate change. Cut me a break, will you? Science is never totally absolute. And here's an example where the calculations for the path of totality is wrong, or could be wrong, you know, based on new calculations that came out. Yeah, NASA wrong? Oh, my goodness me. Well, anyway, interesting piece that appears in USA Today. You know, when I'm back, I've got to talk about EVs, right? You know that's my big topic. Well, Ingrid Jacques, whose columns in USA Today I tend to like, has a piece that's out today. The headline of it reads, "If you like your car, good luck keeping it. Biden's EV mandate drives change people don't want." And when I read this, it reminded me of a caller to this show a while ago who told me, "Biden's not telling you you can't drive your gas-powered car." Well, for that person, if you remember who you were, listen up to what Ingrid Jacques writes here. "In 2013, then-President Barack Obama earned himself the lie of the year. After he had repeatedly assured Americans, if you like your health care plan, you can keep it." Remember him saying that? That simply wasn't true, Ms. Jacques writes. And the rollout of Obamacare, formerly known as Affordable Care Act, caused millions of people to receive cancellation notices. The government's intrusion into the private health insurance market had major consequences, and many Americans weren't happy about it. More than 10 years later, President Joe Biden is driving major disruptions in another major U.S. industry, automobiles. Unlike his former boss, Biden's not even bothering to promise the American people that if they like their car, they can keep it. Biden, however, is also not being upfront with the public about what his new Environmental Protection Agency rule actually means. The headline announcing the EPA mandate last month proclaims the following: "Biden-Harris administration finalizes strongest ever pollution standards for cars that position U.S. companies and workers to lead the clean vehicle future, protect public health, address the climate crisis, save drivers money." As with most bureaucratic mumbo-jumbo, writes Ms. Jacques, the meaning is less than clear. "I'll translate," she says. "If you like your current gas-powered car, SUV, or truck, too bad." The timing of this rule isn't a coincidence. It allows Biden to claim a win on his promises to the climate change crowd months ahead of the presidential election. And Biden needs all the help he can get. Yet the broader implications, if drivers fully understood them, aren't likely to win the president a lot of fans. The final rule, which begins in earnest in 2027, demands that automakers quickly amp up production of electric vehicles. They're in the reverse mode of that right now. They've stopped production of EVs, or they've drastically slowed it down. By 2030, and do you blame them? With all the EVs that were left stranded on their parking lots there at car dealerships? Do you blame them for cutting way back on the production of EVs right now? Well, by 2032, the emission standards dictate that roughly 70% of new vehicle sales be battery-powered, electric, or hybrids. For comparison, EVs make up just under 8% of new car sales last year. If automakers don't fall in line, they risk hefty fines. While the EPA doesn't specifically call for EVs, the only way automakers could reach the new targets is with a major uptick in that very technology. It's worth noting, too, that a switch to electric batteries is not a panacea for the climate. mining and processing those materials take a toll, something Biden ignores, Ms. Jacques writes. There's a huge amount of environmental impact of mining the lithium and copper and all the materials that go into it. So says James Meigs, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and former editor of Popular Mechanics. So, by the time that battery gets to your car, he says, it's already responsible for a huge amount of carbon emissions. How about that? This mandate also comes at an awkward moment. People in the car market are not flocking to EVs, and sales are not meeting expectations. Consumer interest in EVs has declined for 4 consecutive months now, and the public remains concerned about a lack of charging infrastructure, the price, and confusing tax credits. Even comparatively popular Teslas are in a slump. Negative headlines don't help either. When drivers in Chicago couldn't keep their EV batteries charged during a deep freeze earlier this year, it didn't instill confidence for those of us who live and drive in the Midwest. Because we're in a presidential campaign, expect to hear former President Donald Trump harp on potential consequences of Mr. Biden's EPA rule. In fact, Trump has vowed to overturn it. Joe Biden's extreme electric vehicle mandate will force Americans to buy ultra-expensive cars they do not want and cannot afford while destroying the U.S. auto industry in the process. That according to the Trump campaign. This radical policy is anti-jobs, anti-consumer, and anti-American. However, automakers are already gearing up to meet the stricter standards, spending billions with a B in the process. Constantly retooling to meet government-imposed targets presents its own challenges to the industry. No question, Ms. Jacques writes, the impact on car companies will be huge. But what bothers me, she says, most about this regulation is that Biden, through regulatory decree, is trying to force a dramatic change that most Americans don't fully understand yet and very well may not want. Rather than go through Congress, where a robust public debate could take place, Biden quietly did it through the rulemaking process. It's politically deceptive in a way that is all too typical of the Biden administration in a lot of different ways, says Meigs of the Manhattan Institute, who went on to say they have opted to make major policy changes out of sight of average voter. If Biden doesn't want us to keep our beloved gas-powered cars, then he should just say so. The American people deserve to know what a future with Biden at the wheel really looks like. Ingrid Jacques with a piece that appears in USA Today. If you like your car, good luck keeping it. Biden's EV mandate drives change people don't want. All right, with that said, we'll take our first break of this Monday morning. We'll be back in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Now the sounds of Santana to bring us out of that commercial break. Here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. You're listening to Feedback. You're on air Town Square, and I thank you for that. Our phone numbers again are 610-374-8800. Toll-free, 888-401-0459, and our dedicated text line, if you'd like to send your opinion by way of text, is 484-650-3373. Well, we got quite a lineup of guests this week, starting tomorrow. From 10 to 10:30, I'll be joined by Congressman Dan Muser, and we'll talk with him about a couple of the things that are happening in the House today. Then on Wednesday, during the 11 o'clock hour, Reading City Council President Donna Reed will be here. On Friday, Dr. Tim Blessing will be here during the 9 o'clock hour on Friday. We're going to talk about third parties and, using his term, the muddle they create. Yeah, third parties and the muddle they create. Then at 10 o'clock on Friday, State Senator Judy Schwenk will be my guest. And if history is any guide, every time she's here, she typically sticks around for about 20 minutes into the next hour as well because of all the phone calls she tends to get here. She's a popular person when she's on the show with us. So that's a Friday during the 10 o'clock hour with State Senator Judy Schwenk, and we'll be talking with her about what is going on there in Harrisburg. All right, with that said, Mr. Biden is rather concerned about how skeptical America is about his first term accomplishments. And I got this from the New York Times. I don't know if this is an article that the New York Times has written or if it's a campaign piece for Mr. Biden. I'll let you decide. Here's what the New York Times writes. President Biden is discovering that passing one of the most ambitious legislative agendas in recent American history may have been the easy part. Persuading Americans that he deserves a second term may be far more difficult. Confronting low approval ratings and a neck-and-neck race against former President Donald Trump, Mr. Biden is now racing to tell voters about his accomplishments in ways big and small. Road signs that promote his legislation are going up at construction projects financed by his $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Now keep in mind those signs are also being financed by you and me, the taxpayers, helping Mr. Biden in his reelection campaign. Signs are also going up at factories where jobs are being created by his $280 billion CHIPS and Science Act. Again, signs paid for by you and me, the taxpayers, to help Mr. Biden get reelected. Mr. Biden has affixed his name to emails telling Americans with student debt that their loans are being forgiven. Again, with taxpayer dollars provided by you and me. And he's traveling to battleground states to sit down with voters who have benefited from his policies. Oh, let's see. Traveling on Air Force One. Yeah, you got it. That expense picked up by you and me, supposedly reimbursed by his campaign. But I don't know about that. You know, I question whenever any president, and it's not just Biden, any president in the White House who runs for reelection uses Air Force One to get around. I mean, where else, what other airplane can accommodate the President of the United States? And supposedly, they're to get reimbursed for the expense from the campaign. But I question that. Not just with Biden, but with any president who does that. Back to this New York Times piece, however. Democrats traditionally have been the party of the abstract, and we need to be the party that humanizes things. So says Governor Phil Murphy from over there in New Jersey. He's an ally of the president who believes that Mr. Biden has the skill set to do just that. Mr. Murphy goes on to say he personally is so good at this, putting his arm figuratively and literally around the American people and saying, "Hey, listen, I feel your pain." Wait a minute, didn't Bill Clinton get away with saying that all the time? I just don't see Joe Biden doing that. But Mr. Biden faces a host of challenges in reaping the credit that he feels he deserves as he seeks re-election to the White House. Polling shows that a majority of Americans disapprove of his job performance. Many Americans say they benefited more from the policies of Mr. Trump. Most concerning for Mr. Biden, his support remains underwhelming among key parts of the Democratic coalition, including Black and Hispanic Americans and younger voters, the people many of his efforts were designed to help. Some of that negativity can be attributed to the 81-year-old president's age, the lingering effects of the pandemic, and improved views of Mr. Trump. Boy, oh wait, you're actually hearing that from the New York Times. A phenomenon, they say, that is common after presidents leave office. The war in Gaza has depressed enthusiasm among Democrats, too. Mr. Biden, writes the New York Times, however, may also be hampered by the very nature of his major legislation, which is meant to achieve transformational and long-term goals like rebuilding the nation's infrastructure, combating climate change, and reinvigorating manufacturing. Problems of that magnitude cannot be solved instantly, or even before voters go to the polls in November. Without immediate results, ambitious legislation can be harder to market. In contrast, writes the New York Times, Mr. Trump, that is, brought about more tangible changes when he was in office, like cutting taxes and reshaping the Supreme Court. Although those measures do not necessarily poll well among the broader electorate, they could allow him to drive turnout among Republicans at a time when Mr. Biden is struggling to energize his own base. Of course, Mr. Biden's investments in infrastructure and manufacturing are already creating jobs. And he has championed policies with more immediate effects, too, such as capping insulin prices for older people, forgiving some student loan debt, and increasing tax subsidies for Affordable Care Act health insurance. His campaign message has increasingly focused on expanding many of those initiatives to benefit more Americans. At his State of the Union address, Mr. Biden ran through a list of ways he would use a second term to build on the achievements of his first. There's more to do to make sure you're feeling the benefits of all we're doing. What politician doesn't say that who seeks re-election? There's so much more we need to do. Imagine me saying that to my employer, who hired me for a specific purpose, and 4 years later I say, you know, you got to keep me on because there's so much more I need to do to accomplish what you originally hired me to do. Yeah, I can see me keeping that job. Mr. Biden promised, for one example, to broaden a 35 cap on insulin beyond older people. Although some polls and consumer survey sentiment show that Americans are starting to feel better about the economy, Mr. Biden is still finding it tough to break through to voters, and I'm going to share with you the reasons why in a bit here. Reasons why people may not see the benefits that Mr. Biden is talking about as it relates to his economy. And even one of Mr. Obama's advisors says Biden should stop harping on his economic package. We'll explain all that when feedback continues, and we'll take your calls in just a bit. Stay with us.
You cannot hide, not even from yourself.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
By the way, don't forget, if you plan on voting in this year's presidential election here in Pennsylvania, today is the last day to register if you're not a registered voter already, okay? So keep that in mind, and we hope that you do vote this year. By the way, the primary is coming up in the not-too-distant future. It's set for April 23rd here in Pennsylvania. All right, let's go to the phones right now. John in Wyomissing is waiting. He wants to talk about EVs. John, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. Hope you had a great birthday weekend.
Thank you, buddy. I did. How was your weekend?
It was good. Nice to be outside and, you know, not bundled up and freezing cold. Did a lot of yard work.
Ah, there you go. So what's on your mind about EVs?
I think mostly I object to the title of the opinion piece that you shared because, you know, it kind of tells a story. It says, if you like your car, good luck keeping it. But it doesn't really have anything to do with regulating what people can and cannot drive. It has to do with, you know, cars that are manufactured, you know, regulations that the U.S. government has always kind of had the authority to put in place. So I guess unless the readers, you know, buying a brand new model car every year, I think that's kind of a little bit of a deceptive title.
All right, let me ask you this. If more and more people, and I emphasize the word if more and more people end up buying EVs, do you think that oil companies are going to continue producing oil or as much oil as they're producing now?
I guess it depends on the demand, right?
Which is exactly where I'm getting to. So if people keep, those people who do keep their gas-powered cars, how much do you think they're actually going to pay for gasoline going forward?
I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm not in the prediction of the oil market scheme. How much do you think? It sounds like you're asking me a question that you seem to know the answer to, huh?
Well, I don't know what the exact price will be, but I can tell you based on economics, it's going to be a lot higher than what you're paying right now at the gas pump. because there just won't be as much supply out there. So that's one factor that that where people who want to keep their gas-powered cars are going to be hurt.
Sure. I don't think anyone should expect the price of gas to go down, ever. Do you?
It fluctuates. I mean, right now this morning I saw $3.59. It had dropped to $3.30-something a while ago. So it fluctuates now, but if the government is successful in getting more people to drive EVs, first and foremost, you're going to see the price of gasoline go up because they're just going to stop manufacturing as much as they do now. And you're also going to find your electric bill going up. Whether you charge your car at home or not, everybody who taps into the electric grid, that means more demand, chasing less supply. So there you're going to see a price increase as well. So it's
I know you have a big thing about EVs. You never read the article I shared with you about the vehicle-to-grid technology that I've mentioned before on the air as well.
What do you mean I never read it? I read it.
Well, you didn't mention it on air. At least I didn't.
I don't have to mention something that somebody sends to me on the air all the time, but I did read it. You can't make the assumption that I didn't read it.
I meant on air.
Oh, okay. All right. But I'm not under any obligation to read something on air that somebody sends me. But I did read it.
I'm not telling you are, but the vehicle-to-grid technology is something that you conveniently leave out of every discussion about EVs, and I think it kind of takes away a lot of that concern you have about demand going up.
And John, you may not have heard the show either last week or the week before, where we talked about all the hurdles and the cost of upgrading our nation's electric grid in order to accommodate this.
Listen, I'm not a proponent of the conversion. I'm calling to tell you that I think the article you read is an opinion piece, and it has a deceptive title because no one's being forced to get rid of the cars that they drive or saying that they can't buy a used gasoline car, right? I mean, people can go out and they can buy a car from 1965 if they want to, right?
Other than the headline, are you questioning anything else that Ms. Jacques puts in her column?
I am. I think it's an opinion piece. Like I said, it is an opinion piece.
Yeah, it is. And I positioned it that way when I read it on the air.
Just wanted to point out the title was incredibly deceptive and no one's being forced to get rid of their car.
All right, we'll see what the future holds. John, thanks. I appreciated the call today.
You bet.
All right. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Leesport and talk with Sue. Sue, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Yeah, good morning. Speaking of driving, I want to talk about how people don't realize what the laws are concerning a funeral. Friday, I was at a funeral, and when we left the funeral home, we had to pull on 61 North to go to the cemetery. Anyways, according to the laws, and I looked it up on the Internet, as long as the traffic light is green or the funeral hearse stops at a stop sign and it's clear, they can proceed through that, and all the cars that are in line with the hearse can proceed through that. Now, we had maybe 20 cars in our funeral procession, and we get to 61, the light is green, the hearse goes through, maybe three or four other cars go through, and the light changes, and the cars sitting on 61, as soon as that light changed, they proceeded to go through that traffic light and cut us off from the rest of the cars in the funeral.
Oh, wow.
It didn't happen once. It happened twice. And I'm talking cars, tractor trailers, everything.
Wow.
Now, I'm familiar with the area. I knew where the cemetery was. However, if it would have been somebody that was not familiar with that area, they kind of would have been in a pickle going, where the heck am I going? So we finally get up to the cemetery, and I talked to the guy parking the cars. I said, hey, aren't cars supposed to stop and let us through? He said, well, I think so. And this other guy gets out of his car, and he says, yeah, he said they are. Well, apparently people in Berks County, some of them don't know that you're supposed to give the funeral the right of way. I did look it up. It said as long as you have your flashers on and your headlights lit and a flag. Now, we were not given a flag at the funeral home. They said, just put your headlights on in your four ways and follow us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. And I'm really upset about that, because had we tried to proceed with the hearse, there would have been an accident. So I'm just throwing that out there, that people, I guess, aren't aware of what you're supposed to do if you come upon a funeral like that. The only time that we had to yield, it says, is if an emergency vehicle comes through, like a police car, ambulance, fire truck. And, of course, we know that. Now, I don't know if it's because of my generation, because I'm from the older generation, that we know this stuff. But I'm wondering, maybe they should start doing a pop quiz for some of these people that are driving and saying, by the way, what do you do if you come across a funeral? Do you wait? Do you go through? What do you do? So I wanted to just call feedback about that, because we talked about it afterwards. I said, I'm calling feedback, and I'm throwing that out there for the people to hear this.
Well, Sue, I'm glad you did, because according to dmv.pa.gov, which is our PennDOT website, it says, if you see a funeral procession on the road, yield to vehicles in the procession.
Correct.
So that is our law, and you're absolutely correct.
Yep.
But I can't.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But I can't say that it's just limited to Pennsylvania. Back in the late 1980s, when my maternal grandmother passed away, we had a service in Annapolis, Maryland, and then she was laid to rest in a cemetery in Washington, D.C. And as we were traveling from Annapolis to Washington, D.C., a number of people would cut in to mm-hmm. into our procession line. And I'm sure that rules of the road state that you shouldn't be doing that either. Yet they did. And that was back in the 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, it just really made me mad, because I'm thinking, you know, there could have been another accident while we were trying to go to the cemetery to bury a loved one. And they say the reason you do that is to respect the people that are in the funeral, because they know they're grieving. So I just want to throw that out there. And I just also wanted to add that with all the rain we had last week, a lot of cars coming towards me when I was driving, no headlights.
Oh, wow.
I honest to God, I don't think people, I really think they need to do a pop quiz on some drivers and say, hey, do you know that this is what you're supposed to be doing? And also, too, with the pullover law. So anyways, I just want to throw that out there. Thank you for letting me say my piece. I feel better now that I could do that, because it really concerns me that people don't understand some of the laws.
Well, I'm so glad that you called in today, and my sympathies to you, whether it was a friend or a family member or a loved one whose funeral you were at, my sympathies are with you, okay?
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sue, thanks for calling in. You enjoy your day, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye now. Yeah, I agree with Sue. I think we've gotten to the point where we should pull over a few drivers and quiz them right there. The yield sign alone, people just seem to have forgotten what yield means. It's as if what yield means is if you're driving in the right lane, say on 422, you are to come to a complete stop to let the person merging onto 422 come in. Either that, or you run the risk of having the front of your car clipped by that car. I just cannot believe the way people drive today. And it makes me nervous. I always end up having to get into the left lane on 422. I'm just naming 422 because that's one major road that I travel. But any time I come up upon an on-ramp onto 422, I always have to get into the left lane because of the way people are today. They don't stop. They make you stop as the one that's in the right lane of the highway, make you slow down, make you come to a stop, and then you run the risk of being hit by the car behind you. It is crazy. So, Sue, I agree with you 100%. I appreciated your call today. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more of this Monday edition of Feedback in just a bit.
Serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And that's a wrap for hour number one of this Monday edition of Feedback. We'll be back with the second hour, but right now it's news time with Radio PA and ABC, and Bob McCool will have a check on sports for you. It's all here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Thank you for making us part of your day today.
Back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback on this Monday morning. Here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459, and our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. Let's go back to the phones right now. Bob in Leesport wants to talk about Transgender Day of Visibility. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Yeah, I'm still not over that, and I do have a few comments. But before that, you know, my son called me at about 10:30 while I was taking groceries out of the car and said, "Dad, was there an earthquake?" Now, I didn't feel it, but he was in the Enersys office building on the third floor by himself working there because a lot of people stay home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Fridays they have to come. It's one of the days you can work from home. So he was there by himself, and he definitely felt it and thought, you know, the building was, there was something going on.
Oh, wow.
To shake the whole building. So he felt it, and I guess it might have something to do with what bedrock you're on, and whether the building has a very deep foundation or, you know, it's just on soft, easily absorbing shale and soil, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yes.
So it might absorb the shock. But anyway, so yeah, let me talk about this. Because I really didn't get to address this fully on Wednesday, because that day someone called implying that it was because uninformed Christians were too stupid to realize that there had been 13 previous transgender, mind you, 13 previous transgender days of visibility declared each March 31st. So Christians shouldn't be upset that it just happened to fall on Easter. We should just shut up and get over it. Well, I'm not over it. I find it revealing that Biden did not make a similar proclamation to recognize the 1,991st celebration of Christ's resurrection. He picks and chooses, just like one bishop called him a cafeteria Christian. Similarly, just because religious symbols had been banned from the official government Easter egg roll for the past 40 years doesn't make it any less offensive. Why shouldn't Christians be outraged when their beliefs are asked to take a back seat to non-Christian ones? I can make a case that LGBTQIA2 spirit gender plus dysphoria is actually a competing religion to Christianity. To fanatical supporters, it represents their most important identity. Like a religious belief, it's the only thing that gives them value and to which they are totally devoted. Never mind that the Bible teaches Christians to avoid these behaviors as being ungodly and detrimental. It is the Christian who is expected to align his beliefs to match the latest ideas, regardless of their moral implications for him. Perhaps this underlying anger is difficult for someone to understand if they're not a Christian who takes their faith seriously. But this controversy is not about transgender visibility, but Christian invisibility. Christians are supposed to disappear and celebrate the change that's taking place in the culture. But I find that every attack on Judeo-Christian values is just another attempt to submerge the Christian into a secular religion prescribed by the state, a religion of endless inclusion and compromise, a religion of permissiveness and careless behavior where there are no right or wrong ideas, an all-inclusive mash pit in which everyone is encouraged to do what is right in their own eyes, a world in which illegal immigration is no longer illegal, a world in which sexual sin is no longer sin, a world in which laws are no longer laws requiring enforcement. I mean, can you say defund the police? Can you say give me more liberal change, please? To me, these signs of cultural degradation are all tied together. I am more interested in the grand scheme of things than in the minutiae of what meets the letter of the law at the moment. Don't try to shame me out of my shock at the direction our country is headed. I continue to be offended. I recently read that the LGBTQIA plus community had 145 government-sanctioned days of celebration on the calendar already, and still they're not satisfied. I am not waiting for Christians to get just one Biden official proclamation to celebrate Jesus Christ. No, I won't hold my breath. But to borrow a phrase from last week's caller, I would rather that Joe Biden should stay home from church and look like an infidel rather than open his mouth and remove all doubt. And that's something to think about. That's my take of the morning. Yes, I know. I'm still an angry old man, but there are some things that I just cannot, sanction as far as the changes in the attitudes of a culture. And it affects a lot of people in a lot of places, a lot of ways.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. Appreciate you calling in.
Yep, I got it off my chest.
Come off your soapbox now, as I would say.
Yeah, right. I can take my breath now. All right. Hey, thanks.
All right, Bob. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Exeter. Karen, you're not alone if you felt that earthquake on Friday.
Well, basically, here we felt kind of just a trembling, but my husband was down in Clifton Heights, which is near Philly, and he said the buildings were shaking and his chair was rattling and rolling.
Oh,
so
wow.
He felt it more than we did here.
Wow.
But also I wanted to say about the traffic laws. I think it's not the fact that people don't know the laws, but that they choose to ignore them or think they don't pertain to them. A lot of people don't pull over for emergency vehicles anymore. They just keep driving, or they don't stop for school buses like they're supposed to because they just don't think they have to. So I think that's what's going on with that. Because, yes, you've always had to wait for a whole funeral procession before you go. It's always been like that. So,
yeah, that's a good point. And why do you think that more and more people today are choosing to ignore speed limit signs, ignore merging signs, ignoring laws pertaining to funeral processions? Why do you think that's the case today?
Well, because everybody's in a hurry and they're worried about me, and the heck with everybody else.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely, Karen. Yep. I agree wholeheartedly with you.
All right. So just my thoughts.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing them with us today.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye now. All right. I was talking with you about Mr. Biden and his concerns about whether or not, and this was a New York Times article, whether his accomplishments that he deems as being his accomplishments in his first term in office, why more and more people are not giving him credit for it. Well, let me share some reasons as to why that might be the case. Here's a story from the AP. And they say that ever since the Federal Reserve signaled last fall that it was likely done raising interest rates, Wall Street traders, economists, car buyers, would-be home buyers, pretty much everyone, began obsessing over a single question: when will the Fed start cutting rates? But now, with the U.S. economy showing surprising vigor, according to the AP, a different question has arisen. Will the central bank really cut rates three times this year, as the Fed itself has predicted, or even cut at all? The Fed typically cuts only when the economy appears to be weakening and needs help. Lower interest rates would reduce borrowing costs for homes, cars, and other major purchases, and probably fuel higher stock prices, all of which could help accelerate growth. An even more robust economy might also benefit President Biden's reelection campaign. Friday's blockbuster jobs report for March reinforced the notion that the economy is managing quite nicely on its own. Then again, you might recall the article I shared with you a little while ago that shows that maybe the Labor Department is fudging those numbers to benefit the president. Remember how we were saying that several months later, a lot of these Labor Department reports get revised downward? Yeah, it's interesting how that seems to be the case after it's already had its news exposure of, wow, we've got all this job growth. And then months later, those very numbers are drastically lowered. But anyway, Friday's blockbuster jobs report for March reinforced the notion that the economy is managing quite nicely on its own, according to the AP. The government says employers added a huge burst of jobs last month, more than 300,000. And the unemployment rate dipped to a low 3.8% from 3.9%, still not at the 2% rate target that the Fed wants to see. And I have to wonder, how long will it take before this latest jobs report showing more than 300 jobs created is revised downward? Some economists responded by arguing that it's clear the last thing the economy needs now is more stimulus from lower rates. So there's one sign. The Fed may not lower rates at all this year. And then there's a former Obama advisor who cringes at Joe Biden flouting his economic record. I got this from Fox News. And I'm talking about David Axelrod. And I've got to wonder why David Axelrod is picking on Biden so much. Is this an orchestrated effort with Obama in the background, trying to make Biden look bad? I don't know. But this time around, Axelrod is criticizing Biden's economic strategies, revealing that it drove him crazy when the president tried to extol the miracle of his economy as Americans struggle to afford groceries and more. Of course, I agree with David Axelrod in this case. During an appearance on Bill Kristol's podcast, Bill Kristol being a conservative, Axelrod said the president's strategy wasn't going to work. Here's what he said on that podcast. I wouldn't go out there and extol the miracle of the Biden economy. It just drives me crazy when he does that. Again, these are David Axelrod's words. Axelrod noted Biden's Easter interview with Al Roker, arguing that that him touting the strongest economy in the world was the wrong strategy. Axelrod suggested the president consider whether it was wise for him to remain in the presidential race, as Biden was trailing former President Trump in several hypothetical election matchups, including several important swing states. And if we have time, I'll get into that story a little bit later. Axelrod told Kristol that working-class voters would decide the election, and that the president needs to find a way to be on their side. Bottom line, be more like Joe from Scranton and less like President Biden from Washington, Axelrod said. Because those are the voters, Bill, referring to Bill Kristol, who are going to decide this election. Working class people, black, white, and Hispanic, who are very much scuffling still in an economy that has improved. So there you have David Axelrod, a former advisor to Barack Obama, who says that Biden should not be out there touting his economic record because it's doing him more harm than good. And then there's this. You talk about Labor Department numbers that appear to be fudged because of the fact that several months later they're revised downward. And I know, jobs reports all the time are revised. But in many cases, they're revised upward or downward, not continuously downward, which leads me to believe that this is a concerted effort to make this economy look far better than it actually is. Well, then there's this that I got from the Wall Street Journal. Wait till you hear this. Some of the country's savviest economic trend predictors spend all day answering call center phones. Operators at 211 emergency helplines raised alarm bells about a baby formula shortage ahead of the headlines about empty shelves. And they knew that families were defaulting on their mortgages before the subprime collapse in 2008. Now, even as the economy looks healthy by many measures, 211 workers say they're hearing something concerning that more people living very close to poverty than the federal poverty line might suggest. Did you hear that? The federal poverty line may not be a true indicator of today's poverty. And again, I have to wonder, is that a concerted effort again to make the economy look better than it actually is? Let me read more of this article for you. The disparity aligns with polls showing high levels of consumer malaise, despite recent good news like cooling inflation, low unemployment, and strong hiring in March. United Way, the nonprofit that operates about half of the country's 200-plus 211 centers, and other poverty researchers blame that disconnect partly on the federal poverty line, which they say hasn't kept up with the real cost of living. It goes on to say here in the Wall Street Journal, the share of households below the consensus-designated federal poverty line has barely budged since 2010. Meanwhile, poverty researchers say a large and fast-growing group of people are earning too much to qualify for social services and not enough to afford the basics where they live. We wonder why there's so much anger in public discourse today. And it's in part because of the stress people feel to just keep themselves and their families afloat. Those are the words of Lisa Tepper Bates, president of United Way of Connecticut. She says people feel like the system is not serving them. United Way calls this population ALICE, A-L-I-C-E, or Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. The organization says about 36 million American households, or 29%, met the criteria in 2021, the most recent year for which data is available. That's up 18% from 2010. Preliminary data show the same trend continuing through 2022. In nearby Hartford, where the cost of living outpaces the national average, 38% of households fit that description. Call centers operate locally, and Connecticut Center hears from residents all over the state. Trained in root callers, or trained to root callers to thousands of outside resources and service providers, United Way operators say those available to ALICE families struggling to pay their bills are often limited to food pantries and a smattering of religious and government programs without income restrictions. The federal poverty level for a family of four stands at $31,200. United Way of Connecticut estimates the bare minimum survival budget for a family of four with two young children in the state to be as high as $126,000. Who would have thought a six-figure income would represent the poverty level? But this is true. United Way says or uses the local cost of housing, groceries, child care, health care, transportation, technology, and taxes to come up with ALICE survival budgets for every U.S. county. United Way of Connecticut President Tepper Bates doesn't mince words when she says the following: the federal poverty line is garbage. Although the Census Bureau raises the poverty line each year in step with the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index, some poverty experts say the underlying math does not reflect many financial realities. And again, I have to wonder, is that done on purpose? The core assumption that families spend a third of their total income on food, they say, is inconsistent with the fact that, on average, housing consumes the largest share of household budgets. And the metric doesn't adjust for differences in the cost of living across the U.S., which hurts residents of high-cost states such as Connecticut. The Census Bureau released its own supplemental poverty measure in 2011 that provides a more nuanced calculation. The official poverty line of $15,060 for one adult in 2024, however, remains the baseline for determining most public assistance. Among the benefits, Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, called SNAP, and the National School Lunch Program. A group of Democratic congressmen introduced a bill back in December that would change the poverty line calculation more drastically than the supplemental measure and likely qualify more families for benefits. It hasn't received a vote yet. Pandemic-era benefits cushioned families during the early period of rapid inflation. So says Mary Ann Page, director of the Center for Poverty and Inequality Research and an economics professor at the University of California at Davis. Without those programs, she says, more families are struggling. So, Mr. President, maybe that's why you're not getting the accolades that you so think you deserve with your economic program known as Bidenomics. With that, we'll take a break, and we'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Hey, if you have Easy Pass, listen up to this. I just got this from the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. Yesterday afternoon, the PA Turnpike was advised of a phishing scam that's targeting Easy Pass account holders requesting personal information, personal financial information, that is, to settle outstanding toll amounts. The press release goes on to say the texts purport to be from PA Turnpike Toll Services and center around urgent requests with the account that would result in a late fee if the overdue balance does not get settled. Similar scams have been reported by toll agencies across the country over the past several days. Customers who receive an unsolicited text, email, or similar message suggesting it is from Easy Pass or another toll agency should not click on the link. Easy Pass account holders can use approved safe methods to check their accounts, such as the official PA Turnpike Easy Pass website or the PA Toll Pay app available from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Those who receive a fraudulent text can file a complaint with the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. And the web address for that is ic3.gov. That's the letter I, the letter C, the number 3.gov. That is a site dedicated to sharing information on internet crimes across the enforcement agencies. So be on the lookout if you are an Easy Pass holder. Be on the lookout for those scams that they advise you. If you do get this text or this email, do not click on the link and immediately notify the FBI that you received that. Okay, with that said, let's go back to the phones. Gerson in Reading is on the line. Gerson, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Mr. Sanders, I apologize for the little noise. I'm preparing myself some coffee here. Hi. Regarding the celebration of your birthday, it is my wish that may you have many, many, many more, sir.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that.
I wanted to briefly speak in regards to an experience that I had last week while attending a medical appointment where there was a patient, just someone I didn't personally know, but someone that happened to be there present. Now, I'm not going to give details out of respect to the person, where location and what took place. But it happened it had to do with a seizure, again, without the specifics of the person or the patient or the gender or anything like that. And I immediately attempted to call 911 while also, of course, doing whatever little bit of training, first aid, first responder training from my military days by keeping the person to the side so that they wouldn't choke on their on any fluids coming out of them. So when I attempted to call 911 while all this is taking place, I actually was put on hold. And the bulk of the story is that in the many decades of being a resident in this area or any other places that I may have had the need to call 911 for an emergency, I have never been put on hold. And that created a very, very big concern, obviously, at that particular moment in time. Now, obviously, a nurse and other people were able to quickly get to the to the matter, and then eventually they themselves were able to get through to, first responders, and eventually an ambulance did show up. As I was talking with the nurse later on, it baffled me, or really shocked me, when the person mentioned that it seems to be an ongoing issue. It's something that they had experienced before themselves, something that they have noticed happening quite a bit lately. I don't know how lately, weeks, years, but it hurts my heart that as taxpayers, or just as emergency services, that whether we pay for it through our taxes or, again, the expectation as citizens, residents, that such services are available when we need them, it just pains me that happened, and I have never experienced that before. I also wanted to add to my experiences in the past couple of weeks or months. I've seen a lot of vehicles, a lot of individuals. I can't say their age. Most of the times they have tinted windows. It's very hard to get license plates or faces because, unfortunately, they go by so fast in 25-mile-per-hour zone areas, running red lights, running stop signs. I'm talking about vehicles at high rates of speed. There's motorcycles as well, some of them without license plates. Again, this is something that I have noticed for sure, the motorcycles for quite a while, the vehicles running stop signs, like mm-hmm. in the different blocks of Reading.
Right.
It just pains me that I'm seeing a lot more of this. To finish a story, myself included, many out there have relatives, friends, and neighbors walking the streets. We, most of the times, I'm sure, don't wake up desiring to be harmed by anyone, willfully or otherwise. When I go get on my vehicle to drive, I certainly do not wish to cause harm to anyone because they ran a red light or a stop sign. I mean, I try to observe for sure all laws and all traffic rules, including giving way to a funeral proceeding taking place. That's something that not only did I learn through the book handling, obviously, when learning the steps to drive to get your license, your permit, and eventually your license, but also common sense and common courtesy. And I think a lot of the times the lack of procedures, obviously punishments, I guess, the ways to counter these measures with holding accountable individuals, folks committing these acts, let alone causing injury. I think it has contributed to people just not having, not so much about being afraid, but having that, hey, I might want to, get my act together or really, really consider what I'm doing before I behave this way or act this way or cause harm to someone else, willingly or unwillingly. Either way, I think I'm close to the 5 minutes or whatever the time. My apologies, but thank you again and for everything that you guys do for the community, the show, the platform. We appreciate you guys.
Stay with me for a minute, Gerson. Let's go back to the 911 call. You raised some very good points here in your conversation. Yes. Back to the 911 call. Do you know how long you were on hold?
I would say at least 30 seconds. At that point, there was no. The life of the person was more important than being on hold. And at that point, I unfortunately couldn't continue to be on hold. I mean, obviously, other people came in, and then all other measures needed to be taken. So okay. At that point, other people were on the phone as well, and other things have transpired. And there was no need for me to continue to be on the phone.
Gotcha. And how long did it take the ambulance to show up? Do you know?
I would say 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. And I do hope the person survived.
I unfortunately, sir, Mr. Sanders, I do not know.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with me.
It didn't look very well at the time. However, I will say, in a positive note, they were able to get a response from the person up to the point in which the ambulance came. And at that point, the person was still responsive.
All right, that's good to hear. Well, what I'm going to do, because I've got supposedly we're having Berks County Commissioner Chairman Christian Leinbach with us on the show here on the 26th of April, and when he's here, I'm going to ask him if they're having staffing issues there at the 911 center. This was Berks County's 911 center, correct?
I will assume so. I just dialed them on my phone, 911, sir.
Okay, all right.
In the morning. I apologize. It was closer to, it was past afternoon. It was past 12.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, I'm going to ask him that question to see. And still, it's not justified to keep someone on hold for any amount of time when you're dealing with an emergency like that. So thank you for bringing that to
me. It could be anyone. Obviously, it could be young, old. It could be, again, it's just one of those, wow, I've never experienced this before. And it does become a bit concerning. Obviously, I don't wish ill upon anyone. And, well, again, I just hope that it's not something that is the going future. I hope it was just an isolated moment or event for that particular experience.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in and letting us know about that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. May everyone in our community enjoy and be safe and enjoy the eclipse. And please be careful not looking at the sun directly and use only approved or appropriate eyewear or whatever the case may be. And thank you again.
Good advice. Gerson, thank you, buddy. Appreciated the call today. And we'll be back with more of feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
A little bit of Van Morrison for you coming out of that commercial break. Here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, as feedback, your on-air town square continues on this Monday morning. By the way, tomorrow I will have Congressman Dan Muser in with me from 10 to 10:30. That's tomorrow here on Feedback. Hope you'll tune in and hear what he has to say. We're going to talk about a lot. We're going to talk about where the impeachment effort of President Biden stands, as well as his thoughts on the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and an effort that's underway by Marjorie Taylor Greene, who to me is the Republican version of AOC on the Democratic side. AOC, extremely progressive. Marjorie Taylor Greene, extremely conservative. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is now saying, well, she's threatening to start a movement to have Mike Johnson removed as Speaker of the House. Yeah, we may go through that again. So I'm going to talk to Congressman Muser, since he is Republican, and get his side of that, where he stands on Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House and Marjorie Taylor Greene's possible efforts to have him removed. She says she's holding off on it for now. She hasn't come up with a date that she's going to do it, and she may not do it in the end. But there are a lot of press reports out there that indicate that she just might go through with that. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about immigration. Why not? Got this from Fox News. The Bronx judge who set loose six suspected migrant squatters arrested on drugs and weapons charges last week, previously released two men who beat up a police officer. Bronx criminal court judge Eugene Bowen, a Democrat elected in 2022, released the six men against the wishes of prosecutors. One of the migrants, Hector de Sousa Villata, age 24, from Venezuela, had been arrested in August on attempted murder charges before the case fell apart. Prosecutors had asked to hold de Sousa Villata on $150,000 cash bail, but Judge Bowen instead released him and five others without bail. And it's not the first time he's provoked controversy by doing so, according to Fox. Back in November, the judge was the subject of a scathing New York Post editorial that blasted his decision to set free two men who were caught on video beating up a cop. The officer had asked the men to put out their cigarettes at the Freeman Street subway station, according to the NYPD. Kareem McCleary and Isaiah Jezami, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, were arrested on assault charges for allegedly beating up Officer John Hernandez. Prosecutors requested bail set at $10,000 or $30,000 bond, but Judge Bowen released them without bail, according to court records. At the time, the decision provoked outrage from Patrick Hendry, president of the Police Benevolent Association Union. Here's what he said. This shows the absolutely upside-down world we're living in. Amen to that. We need New Yorkers to start speaking up and demanding real consequences for those who assault cops, he said. Our streets and subways won't be safe if the cops protecting them aren't safe. Judge Bowen was elected to the Civil Court of New York in 2022 and has served on the bench for a little more than a year now. He was designated a judge on the Criminal Court of the City of New York, Bronx County, by Acting Chief Administrative Judge Tomiko Amarker back in 2023. Prior to winning the election, Bowen was a criminal defense attorney for the Legal Aid Society. He graduated from the University of Miami School of Law in 2010. The eight migrants who appeared before Bowen last week were all charged with criminal possession of a weapon, criminal possession of a controlled substance, and acting in a manner injurious to a child. That's because a 7-year-old child was found living in their home at the time. Wow. And then there's the latest from John Fetterman. He never stops to amaze me at what he's doing. Again, he's going against his progressive side of his party. According to Fox, John Fetterman sounded off on squatters during a recent interview, questioning how they had a right to occupy another person's home as squatting continues to take a toll on homeowners across the United States. During an interview with the New York Post that was published on Saturday, Fetterman said squatters have no rights. He said, squatters have no rights. How can you even pretend that this is anything other than you're just breaking the law? Fetterman also told the Post, I am not woke. Way to go, Mr. Fetterman. It's wild that if you go away on a long trip for 30 days and someone breaks into your home and suddenly they have rights, he said. This is crazy. Like if somebody stole your car and then they held it for 30 days, then somehow you now have some rights? Again, this is Senator Fetterman speaking. Fetterman also called for a smarter, more aggressive crime policy and spoke out against the man who allegedly shot New York Police Department officer Jonathan Diller. The alleged murderer had several prior arrests. Fetterman said, if you have those kinds of established records, it doesn't serve any greater goal to allow people that are offending, yeah, he said it three times, and allow them to not be held accountable. That's Senator John Fetterman. Way to go. I agree wholeheartedly with what he has to say. All right, I want to talk further about a measles outbreak and also a tuberculosis outbreak that is going on in several shelters, migrant shelters out there in Chicago. We'll talk about that and much more and what sanctuary cities are now doing with their shelters. And they're supposedly sanctuary cities. That and much more when feedback continues on this Monday morning. Stay with us.
Traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
Paul Davis with a song called Cool Night. here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where right now we have sunshine and 56 degrees in downtown Reading. By the way, this note, Reading City Council is going to host a public meeting addressing parking changes on Hampton Boulevard. Concerns regarding visibility and safety at the North 13th Street and Pike Street intersections will also be discussed. If you'd like to attend, come to Albright College McMillan Campus, Center South Lounge, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock for that meeting, okay? And that'll just about do it for hour number two of this Monday edition of Feedback. We'll be back with hour number three, but right now it's time for news with Radio PA and ABC, followed by sports with our own Bob McCool. So keep it here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, and I thank you for that.
To Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Cheap Trick to kick off hour number three of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone number's here if you'd like to take part in the show and share your opinion of the topics of the day are the following. 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. But if you'd like to text us your opinion instead, you can do so on our dedicated text line. That's 484-650-3373. And of course, our email address remains feedback at 830weeu.com. Got this from Fox News and their website. The alarming outbreak of measles and tuberculosis at migrant centers in Chicago could easily have been avoided if the illegal migrants had been vaccinated at the border and if they weren't living in cramped conditions, according to two medical experts. Chicago health officials said Wednesday of last week that a small number of TB cases were reported at some migrant facilities, following reports of dozens of measles cases at those facilities. Concerns are quickly growing that these cases will multiply and spread to the general population in the Windy City. There are also fears that similar outbreaks could occur in other sanctuary cities, such as New York, Boston, and Denver, jurisdictions that have also packed migrants into makeshift shelters and hotels. Unlike most U.S.-born children who have to follow strict vaccination schedules, migrant students were, up until last month, not required to be vaccinated in order to attend school in Chicago, under an exemption for children living in unstable housing, according to reports. In New York City, migrant students there were also given waivers at the start of the 2023-2024 school year. Migrants who were stopped at the border and then released into the general population are largely medically screened, or rarely, I should say, medically screened or given vaccines. Legal migrants like green card holders are required to be vaccinated for a range of inoculations as part of their approval process. Incredible. And you know what this reminded me of? Think back to the pandemic when Governor Cuomo up there in New York decided to put elderly people who were infected with COVID back into nursing homes. And remember how that quickly spread and how many people died from that? Well, the same thing is happening here. Forgive me, my vocal cords are giving out on me today. So forgive me if I lose my voice every once in a while. And to show you how this is going, sanctuary cities are putting limits now on migrant stays in those shelters. This according to the Wall Street Journal. After paying millions to accommodate waves of migrants for months, some places are at the breaking point and instituting shelter stay limits to gird their budgets and resources. The moves are leaving some migrants, many of whom are awaiting asylum hearings that are years away, with few options since they have no lawful means to work. Shelter limits are part of a broader set of tactics that state and local lawmakers are implementing in the absence of adequate federal support. You hear that, Mr. Biden? Federal lawmakers appear to be at a standstill over immigration, spurring Texas to continue sending busloads of migrants north and leaving cities largely on their own to deal with the consequences. In New York, Mayor Eric Adams there last year asked a judge to consider modifying the city's legal right to shelter for single adults, which was established in 1981 following lawsuits. That request led to a mid-March settlement, which details how, in emergency situations, the city can apply shelter stay limits to solo adult migrants who are arriving in numbers the city says it can't handle. Many of the recent migrants face a daunting wait to work legally in the U.S. They must first formally ask for asylum in immigration court, then wait several months to file for a work permit. That permit often takes many more months to be awarded. In addition to New York City, which has seen some 186,000 migrants arrive since the spring of 2022, length of stay restrictions are active at shelters in Chicago and Denver. All three have received thousands of people from Texas, where Governor Greg Abbott there began transporting migrants to other states in 2022. While keynoting the New York Republican State Committee annual gala on Thursday evening of last week, Abbott recounted how he started the busing program, first sending migrants to the sanctuary city of Washington, D.C., and later New York City. Abbott said the following, "I gotta tell you, the complaining by Mayor Adams is nothing short than stunning. What he has is a tiny fraction of what Texas gets every single day." Denver Mayor Mike Johnston said shelter stay limits, along with efforts to step up case management and other aid, have helped the number of migrants in Denver shelters decrease to hundreds from thousands. And the city has been closing shelters it set up in area hotels. Have to wonder where these migrants are going. Possibly out into the streets as homeless people now. Here's what Denver's mayor said. "If we hadn't done that, we'd be facing $180 million of budget cuts this year. That's about 10% of the city's budget." Well, maybe they should have thought about that before they designated themselves as a sanctuary city. You think? In Chicago, more than 38,500 migrants have arrived by chartered bus or plane since August of 2022, according to the city data. More than 9,600 remained in shelters where stays are now subject to a 60-day limit, though, as in other cities using such limits, extensions are possible. To date, according to city data, more than 21,500 people have exited shelters after being resettled or reunited with friends and family. Several dozens have exited as a result of the city's shelter stay limit. New York is currently caring for roughly 64,000 migrants. The number of migrants in daycare is still larger than its traditional homeless population, though the 30- and 60-day limits have helped the migrant population in shelters decrease from a high of 69,000 in January, says Ann Williams Isom, who is New York City's deputy mayor for Health and Human Services. According to the city, 60% of the migrants who have spent time in shelters have since exited, though the city doesn't track where they go. Nice, huh? All right, let's go to the phones right now. We've got Paul in Reading who wants to talk about traffic laws. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
One way to get people to obey the traffic laws is to start publishing updated driver's manuals so that people could get an update on the traffic laws, know what traffic laws are current. Right now, the state doesn't give out driver's manuals anymore.
Well, the law pertaining to merging onto traffic is the same as it was when I learned to drive all those many years ago.
Yes.
And everybody who takes a driver's test, they've got to go through driver. They've got to go through a driver's class, driving class first. And I, quite honestly, Paul, I don't fault the schools that are teaching these kids how to drive. I think it's today's drivers who just don't care anymore.
But I mean, if even older drivers, if they want to get an update on any changes of the laws, if there was a place where they could go, if the state would start publishing driver's manuals again, the older drivers would, any driver who's been on the road for a while would be able to get an update on the law. They'd be able to read it and get a refresher of the laws, and that would probably help out those who are really interested in complying with the laws.
Sean, do me a favor, would you? Would you go on to PennDOT's website and see if the manual is on there? So if they don't hand out a printed version, I want to see if there's one that's available online, and if there's also a section on there about any changes to driver laws here in the state.
Oh, I could verify that they do say to go online, but that's only for people who have access to the Internet. For those who don't have access to the Internet but still want to learn the latest laws and get an update, that doesn't do any good.
Well, most of the people who are violating our laws today, let's face it, most of them are of the age where they do have the Internet. They do have access to the Internet. They've got a cell phone. And to me, there's no excuse. If you've taken a test and you have a driver's license, that means you have some knowledge of what our driving laws are here in Pennsylvania.
When I was working construction inspection on roads and I'd see drivers on the road, I have no idea whether that driver has access to an Internet or not, or whether they, or even how much money they make, or where they live, even if they're so, like I said, we can't say that they could simply go online. We can't say whether the drivers who are violating the laws, I have no way of knowing whether they have Internet or not.
Well, I mean, let's take yield signs, for instance. It doesn't even require access to the Internet to know what the word yield means. And yet, how many people are yielding the right-of-way to people on a busy highway today when they're on an on-ramp? They're not. They're just continuing to go on. It's rudeness. That's what it boils down to. And whether they have access to the laws or not, you're talking about people who just don't care.
Well, we don't know how many people don't care and how many people do care but don't have access to the latest information.
Sean, what did you find?
I found that they do have their manual on their website, and just by the look of it, it is like the exact same one I had in high school when I took it.
Yeah, I didn't think much has changed.
But I'm sure they've updated if I went through. It's all 104 pages of it.
Is there any
available as a PDF?
Is there anything on there that says that people can order it in book form?
I'm not seeing that, but I'm sure you would be able to. I could look around for that.
I went to my local DMV office, and they said that I couldn't order it. And I also went to my local AAA office, and they told me I couldn't order a written publication either. So that's two sources that said I can't order a written publication from PennDOT, that the only way to do it is to go online. That comes from two different credible sources.
I mean, the only laws that have changed that I'm aware of since I took my driver's test is the fact that you have to have your headlights on when it rains or it snows. You have to see to it that you clear off all snow and ice from your vehicle so it doesn't fly onto the car or the vehicle behind you. And the third one pertains to veering over into the left-hand lane when there is an emergency vehicle, a tow truck, or a police car that has pulled another vehicle over so that you can avoid hitting them. And, of course, work zone areas, too.
Yes, and an updated driver's manual would be able to tell all the drivers about these updated regulations.
Yeah, I'm just not so sure that even if they had access to it, Paul, I think a lot of the people today just don't care that they're in, as the other caller said, they're in it for themselves today, and they don't care what anybody else thinks. They're just not going to yield. They're going to continue plowing onto the highway and make you slow down or stop if you happen to be the unfortunate driver in the right lane approaching an on-ramp at the time.
Yeah, but give the people the opportunity who don't have access to the Internet to learn the latest laws. And if they don't take the advantage of the opportunity, that's their problem. But at least give them the opportunity to learn the latest laws by having written publications of the updated driver's manual.
Yeah, Paul, I think going forward with the Internet so accessible today, you're going to find that more and more things like the pamphlet for driver's ed laws just will not be published anymore. It's too costly for the state to do that, so they are going to make it available just on the Internet. Now, that's just the way it is today, unfortunately.
Well, it's a way that needs to be changed. We need to go back to the old ways when essential books are published.
Well, there are some things, Paul, that you're never going to see us go back to the old ways, and I'm afraid that's one of them.
Well, like I said, I stated my suggestion, and so it's up to other listeners to respond, and if there are any politicians listening, maybe they have my suggestion.
All right, Paul. Thanks for weighing in today. We'll see what others have to say, okay?
Okay.
All right, take her easy now.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback on this Monday morning. You're on air Town Square. Let's quickly go back to the phones right now. Kenny in Sinking Spring wants to talk about driver's manuals. Kenny, good morning. Welcome to the show.
All right. Yeah, there's tons of resources out there. One is there. You can do, well, it is online, but they also have them in person, which is Seniors for Safe Driving.
Okay.
So it gives you an option to get even discount, like maybe 5% off your insurance. But it could be about 8 hours or so online. But when you go there, I guess, you know, it varies on time. But they have different locations, so you can look that up. There's also, you know, the Driver License Center, which our area has in Chillington, Lancaster Avenue. So, you know, you can go in there and request things.
Okay.
There's also another phone number, which is the Driver License Center, and they probably will mail out an actual booklet manual. And I have a number for them.
All right, go ahead. What's that phone number?
800-932-4600. And there's a menu off. You can go through it.
All right, so that number again is 800-932-4600, did you say?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, so, Kenny.
Yeah. I realize, you know, guys, people sometimes they're not on online, so they have difficulties finding things, but they're still out there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that info with us today.
All right.
All right, Kenny.
Good to hear you back on the air.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. You take care, okay?
Yep.
All right, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bob in Lansdale just sent me an email. He's got a link attached here, but I'm just going to read what his subject line reads. He says, printed Pennsylvania driver's manuals can be obtained from Amazon and Walmart. I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Bob in Lansdale, thank you for sharing that with us to tell us that you can get printed copies of the Pennsylvania driver's manual through Amazon or Walmart.
Yeah, I see it right here just looking at that. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that either.
No. So thank you, Bob. Appreciate you doing that for us. So there you have it, Paul in Reading. You do have ways of getting copies of the printed version of the state's driver's manual. And Sean and I were talking over the commercial break. Is it just me, Sean, or does people avoiding, or not avoiding, but ignoring yield signs, does that drive you crazy too?
It is my least favorite thing among many things I don't like about 422, that the yield areas are the worst. Go in both directions. It's people, like you brought it up earlier on the show, people forget that it's not the people who are in that yield lane. They don't have the right of way. They are yielding to us. It is telling you to yield. It is telling those drivers to yield, not the people on the freeway.
Right, absolutely.
And people just don't do it. I was telling you, the one on 422, right as you get off the bypass in Douglasville, Amity, the yield lane where they come up through Stowe, every time I'm on it, I have to make sure I'm in the left-hand lane at that point, because I know if there's someone there, I'm going to have – it's a game of chicken, and I don't want to lose.
But yeah, I
at the
you.
Same time, I don't even want to play it. So
That is dangerous, that on-ramp, because the 422 is curving at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's very difficult for somebody coming up that on-ramp to see oncoming traffic in their rearview mirror. Yeah,
and now that whole area is going to be even more packed when they open up that Royals Farm.
Oh, don't get
– that light is already insufferable. I already can foresee it. Because 3 weeks ago or something, they shut down those lanes
right.
so they could do the construction. I'm not looking forward to that at all.
I'd like to talk to the officials who approved that project for that restaurant to go in there.
Yeah.
Because you know darn full well there are enough accidents at that intersection anyway.
Yeah.
And to have people coming in and out after buying their chicken.
Yeah,
filling their gas tanks, it's going to be crazy.
Because that used to be where the bus lot was for Klein.
Right, yes.
So I guess, people with money, that's a untapped land there that I could use, but I think that's going to cause a ton of congestion if you're coming to and from that. Thankfully, I don't go that way that much,
right,
but
yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I don't think there was much thought put into that, and I'm trying to remember the name of the road, whether that's River Bridge that intersects 422 right there. I can't remember the name of that road, but anyway, had to get that off my chest. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that, however. Well, here's something, and I put this on our Twitter page. I'm not going to call it X. I put it on Facebook, Feedback's Twitter page, and I also put it on our Facebook page about Joe Biden facing hurdles to get onto Ohio's presidential ballot. And this has nothing to do, it's not retaliation against those states that tried to get Trump off their ballot at all, but here's what the Washington Examiner is reporting about this. Biden's reelection campaign is facing a complication in Ohio after the Secretary of State out there revealed on Friday that the president could be left off the ballot for the state's presidential election. Counsel for Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose wrote in a letter obtained by the Examiner to the state Democratic Party that the deadline to certify the ballot is August 7th. That's a week and a half before the Democratic National Committee's August 19th nominating convention. These dates create an apparent conflict in Ohio law, legal counsel Paul DeSantis wrote. Ohio law requires presidential candidates to have been nominated by their national party before they can qualify for placement on the ballot. There are alternative means to make the ballot, but they would require action from the DNC or the state's General Assembly. I am left to conclude that the Democratic National Committee must either move up its nominating convention or the Ohio General Assembly must act by May 9, 2024, 90 days prior to a new law's effective date, to create an exception to this statutory requirement, DeSantis wrote. A Biden campaign spokesperson told ABC News that the campaign anticipated it would still make the state's ballot. "We're monitoring the situation in Ohio," the spokesperson said, "and we're confident that Joe Biden will be on the ballot in all 50 states." Former President Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, won Ohio by decisive margins in both 2016 and 2020. So here's a sticking point for Mr. Biden and the Democrats, getting him, making sure that he gets on the ballot so that people can vote for him. And it has nothing to do with trying to prevent him from being on the ballot. It has to do with the deadlines, the date at which the deadline date at which you qualify to be on the ballot versus the actual date that Mr. Biden becomes the official nominee of his party. I doubt seriously the DNC is going to move up the date of their convention. So I guess the only option here is for the Ohio state lawmakers to change or create a bill and pass a bill that would make an exception in this case for Mr. Biden. We'll keep you updated on how that stands. In the meantime, let's go back to the phones. Let's head to Lancaster and speak with George this morning. George, good morning.
Good morning, and I hope you had a nice weekend.
I did. How about you?
Took a couple of Mennonite friends to a mud sale down in Strasburg, and then
Wait a minute. To what?
A mud sale.
A mud sale.
Yeah. You ever hear it?
No. What is a mud sale?
All right. Well, think of this time of year when a lot of people walk on the ground. It gets muddy because the ground is defrosting or after rain. Things like that.
Uh-huh.
Now, when fire companies have auctions as fundraisers, often put on by the Mennonite and Amish communities.
Okay.
So these auctions have all sorts of things that you would need or want in a in an agricultural area, farm equipment, hand tools, machine tools, household furnishings, craft stuff, garden stuff, whatever you can think of.
Okay.
And the only thing they didn't have for sale is my youth. At least the only thing I couldn't find was my youth, you know?
If that's for sale, I'm the first one to buy it, pal.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, buddy. And let me share it. And would you share it with me?
No.
No, okay. Oh, darn it. Oh, you're selfish.
No, I okay, would, I'm sorry. I wouldn't trade my age for being young again. No way. I'm enjoying life where I am now.
My grandfather, a World War I veteran, used to say, "All too soon, wise too late, and youth is wasted on the young."
Absolutely.
I'm calling to, then yesterday went to a wedding with the same couple. Their eldest son was marrying, and it was fun to get there. I'm wanted to mention to you today that it looks like the solar eclipse is going to affect the reception for AM broadcast band. Well, during the height of the eclipse, we who are anybody can tune up and down the AM broadcast band and hear distant radio stations, which you would only hear at night, but our conditions will be better because broadcast stations will be operating at full daytime power as permitted by the FCC. Have you ever seen any or heard of anything like that?
Now, this is the first I'm hearing of this.
It's based on physics. I'll explain as simple as I can. There are seven layers of the ionosphere. During the daylight hours, the sun actually electrifies several layers of the ionosphere that are not present at night. And at night, the stations such as yours and many others have to decrease their power so that they won't interfere with other stations which share the same frequency and in farther distances. Now that I'll say there's about four layers of the ionosphere which are disappeared at night. The radio signals bounce off the F layer, the highest layer of the ionosphere.
All right, let's not get mired in the saying is that people would be able to hear AM stations farther away than what they would under normal circumstances.
Yeah,
am I right?
Yeah, I'm sorry to get mired. This is my hobby.
No, that's okay.
I was a radio engineer one time.
That's okay.
Well, you know, it might be something interesting to listen to, tune up and down the AM broadcast band.
But we're not going to be knocked off the air, is what you're saying.
No. As a matter of fact, you'll be able to be heard much further away.
Yeah, that's and something else that I saw here, George, that I found rather interesting. NASA warns eclipse watchers that pointing a phone camera at the sun could result in damage to the lens.
That's true. It's actually to the sensor in the in the camera itself.
Yeah.
I would, if somebody's going to use a camera, I'd recommend using a good DSLR or SLR with a very, very good filter on it in order to restrain the amount of light that gets into the sensor as not to burn it up.
All right. I've got to go there because I've got a hard commercial break here. George, thanks, buddy.
Have a good day. See ya.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now. We'll be back with more feedback and your calls in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
No doubt about it, I choose Boston cream over glazed.
I hard disagree. I choose glaze over Boston cream. I hate Boston cream donuts.
No, glazed, it makes your hands, your fingers so sticky.
Then wash them. That is my thing.
I mean, I end up licking them, and it drives
that's
me...
Okay, that's fair. I understand. It's not for everybody. I don't like Boston cream. I bit into one as a kid expecting that, like, vanilla cream in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I got... whatever that is, that pudding, I guess, is.
Right.
Ruined it for me forever. I refuse to eat them.
Well, we'll see what's on Mornings with Mike tomorrow. But I still say Boston cream. Let's go back to the phones. Here's Matt in Shillington. Matt, good morning.
How do you guys survive the day having all these difficult choices to make in your lives? It's truly amazing, Bill. Hey, and because you sound so rested and relaxed, I think we can handle a brief return to civics class regarding the Electoral College, because an interesting piece came up about some possibilities. But just a quick review, when we go to the polls in November, we're actually going to see the names Biden and Trump on the ballot. However, if you vote for Biden, you will actually be voting for a slate of 19 loyal Democrats and party leaders who pledged to cast their votes for Biden if he is certified as the winner of the popular vote. Same goes for Trump. If you vote for Trump, you're actually voting for a slate of 19 loyal Republicans who are pledged to cast the vote votes if Trump is certified the winner of the popular vote. In other words, it's in a winner-take-all system, Bill. Whether you win a state by 20 votes or 20,000 votes, you will get all 19 of Pennsylvania's electoral votes. And I think we covered this a little while back, but just a quick trip on memory lane. Who are these presidential electors? I went online to find the names of the 20 Democrats who cast PA's vote for Biden. I have a few names I could recognize, but I think we all recognize the one name. One of the Democrat electors was named Josh Shapiro. He was the attorney general back then. And, Bill, if you notice, I said I went from 20 to 19, and that is because of the 2020 census. Pennsylvania will be losing one electoral vote because of population shifts. So here's the key point from today. This winner-take-all doesn't work in Nebraska and also in Maine. Since 1991, Nebraska had split its five electoral votes. Two go to the winner of the statewide race, and then the other three are divided up by the winner of each of the three congressional districts. So in 2020, Bill, four of the five votes went to Trump because he won the popular vote in the state, and he won two of the three seats. Biden got one Nebraska electoral vote because he won the congressional district, which is surrounds Omaha. And again, same thing over in Maine. They had, it looks like, four electoral votes. Three went to Biden, and one went to Trump because Trump won one of the congressional districts. So here's where it leads to what I saw today. On the math, with the total of 538 electoral votes, which hopefully we learn they get that number by adding the 435 House districts plus 100 Senate seats plus three for Washington, D.C., it is mathematically possible that the electoral vote could end up tied 269 to 269. And the reason this is
interesting, oh, geez, I hope not.
We're expecting a close race. USA Today and another publication I saw, they're covering a story. The Trump campaign is actually urging the Nebraska state legislature to switch to a winner-take-all system so that mathematically, it being a red state, you know, Trump could get all five electoral votes. And theoretically, Bill, a 269-269 could turn it 270-268. They're actually proposing that. I'll track it to see if it goes anywhere. I didn't see anything about any proposal in Maine for them to switch to, winner take all. But because it could be so close, again, here's where the math comes in. And something here, we want to avoid the nightmare scenario. Bill, I don't expect you to know. That's why I'm offering a sleeve of gold stars here. The Constitution's pretty clear, my friend. How would we decide the president if the Electoral College ended up 269 to 269? Do you remember anything about that?
Boy, does that go to the House?
Very simply, it goes, first, how is this? The Senate will decide who the vice president would be. The House will decide who the president would be. However, Bill, in the House, it's not like one person has every vote. Every state has a vote. The state legislature in every state. So we have 50 state legislatures. If 26 of the 50 vote.
Whoop. Did I lose Matt? I think we lost Matt. Matt, we lost you, buddy.
Avoid that. Let's still, if it's winner take all, whatever, let's still have the people make that decision. So I'll keep tracking the bill, but it was an interesting thing that hit today, and I wanted to share it with you.
All right, before you hang up, we lost you there for a little while. I'm sorry. What you said. Repeat the last couple of paragraphs there that you said.
Just the last couple of sentences were the idea that I did hear you say, you guessed right, that if it's tied, it would go to the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives, it wouldn't be 435 votes. It would be 50 votes. Each state legislature will cast its vote for who should win. And so if 26 state legislatures decide Trump or 26 state legislatures decide Biden, the House would make the decision that way. And crazy thing, Bill, but it's the old Constitution. In the Senate, would choose who the vice president would be, and each senator would have a vote. So let's hope it doesn't happen, but it caught my attention because it was in USA Today, okay?
So conceivably,
yep.
conceivably, because the GOP has somewhat of a majority in the House and the Democrats have somewhat of a majority in the Senate, we could end up with a Republican president and a Democratic vice president?
Well, for sure, Bill, with the Senate, you know, again, it's every senator voting in the House. Remember, it's not the 435.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I think you're right. I think a majority of the 50 state houses or legislatures are controlled by Republicans. But I'd have to do a deep dive, and I'm too lazy to do that in 6 or 7 months before. But you're right. It's possible whatever state legislatures have a majority of one party, it would take 26 of them to name the new president. And you're right, Bill. Theoretically, they could have a Trump for president and Kamala Harris for vice president. And Bill, as you know, that's why we changed the Constitution when who was it? John Adams, vice president, was Thomas Jefferson, I believe. So we did change the Constitution that there's a separate vote for president, separate for vice president with the Electoral College.
Wow.
So
wow.
Thanks again, Bill. Welcome back.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciated the call. Bye-bye now. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the final seconds of this edition of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
That matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
By the way, don't forget tomorrow from 10 to 10:30, I'll be joined by Congressman Dan Muser. That's on tomorrow's Feedback show. And on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, Reading City Council President Donna Reed will be here. And on Friday, two guests will be with me. During the 9 o'clock hour, it's Dr. Timothy Blessing from Alvernia University talking about third parties and, as he put it, the muddle they create. And then State Senator Judy Schwank joins me Friday morning at 10 o'clock to answer your questions. That's all coming up this week here on Feedback on the Voice of Berks and Beyond. 830 WEEU. Want to thank everybody who shared their opinions with us on the topics of the day. You folks are the stars of the show. We'll do it again tomorrow. Want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill. Good to be back.
Good to be back with you. And right now we're going to break for news, so keep it here on The Voice at Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. And until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.